You're listening to the Kitchen Obsessed podcast. Every week, we discuss the challenges facing modern restaurant kitchens and the technologies to help solve them. Now, here's your host, Sean Shankle.
All right, we're here with the second part of our conversation with Sterling Douglas, co-founder and CEO of Chally. We had such a great conversation that we felt like we needed to break it up. Sterling, it's great to continue. Welcome.
It's great to be back, Sean. I noticed that the topic for our episodes was grow with the flow. So I can't help but come prepared with a couple of comments. I thought you were going to ask me about my hair and the amazing flow that I put together. And my marketing person informed me that that is actually not what we're talking about. We're going to dive really deep on SMB operators and restaurant tech. So, you know, I'm ready to dive into that now.
You know what? That's right. We just sort of try to stay nimble and pivot here. But yeah, when I first met you, it was short and on top. And now it is grown with the flow. It looks good, man.
Yeah. Yeah. As Chally has matured, you know, I gotta switch it up every once in a while. So
yeah, that's good. Give me a quick update. How are you thinking about corporate feeder programs, integrations, things like that? And what I mean by that is like catering, easy cater. We see all kinds of statistics about companies bringing people back to work. We see statistics about delivery to homes going down, but companies bringing people back to work means catering lunches, things like that. Are you seeing that in your channels, or are you thinking about integrating those corporate feeder programs? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so we've seen two contradicting forces. On one hand, you are seeing a little bit less just because there's less people in physical offices. But at the same time, companies are working harder than ever to incentivize their employees to come to the office. So on a per company basis, you're seeing a lot more catering. Even at Chally, when we cater food for our employees way more often than we did before the pandemic, because it's an incentive to be like, hey, we're going to ask you all to come to the office. So we're going to, you know, put some reward for coming in. And so I don't think we know yet which one of those forces is going to overtake the other, but it is nice to see catering coming back on the whole, just because it's such a great arm for restaurants. Mm-hmm. It's more predictable. It's large orders. You make a lot of money once. It's such a great revenue arm for restaurants. And I'm so glad that it's coming back because it can be so helpful.
Does it need to be integrated? Do catering orders need to be integrated into the POS stack, since they typically are future orders and prepared outside of the typical production workflow?
Yeah, I mean, how else are you going to do accounting reconciliation, staffing prediction, make sure that you've got, you know, your right kitchen receipts, labels, names? I mean, you still have to perform the same kitchen operation in the back. You still need food to hit the KDS. You still have an order in which the way you do things. If you're pulling order data to help figure out how much packaging you need to order, how much food you
inventory.
Need,
mm-hmm.
you still need all of that in the point of sale. So yeah, I think it still carries all the same value you get from getting the orders into the point of sale. And would you rather sit and enter a $400 order in manually or just have it pop right in?
That's it. So I'm hearing Chally embraces the corporate feeder integrations.
Yeah, I think from a catering in general is really good for restaurants. And that means that Chally's going to help try to make it as simple as we can.
All right, so let's pivot a little bit. And this is interesting. You were saying earlier, and I think it makes a lot of sense, spend your dollars on your first party digital experience. Let third party DSP, things like that, be just extra volume, especially since
supplemental revenue.
Yeah. Supplemental revenue, especially since the percentages, which is a strategy, you know, increasing prices, things like that, but also customer data. Those things are important, but you don't get those through the third parties. Chipotle had reported, I want to say maybe last week, an increase in dine-in sales and a decrease in digital and DSP orders. So that means that delivery orders are dropping not only as a percentage of sale, but then they also reported that I believe their EBITDA was up. And so what that's suggesting is, are we starting to see a trend where consumers may be moving away from DSP due to the expense over to either first party or dine-in sales? in light of headwinds of inflation, possible recession, things like that, if that is true, how should SMB restaurant operators be thinking about positioning themselves if that is indeed the trend that is happening?
Yeah, I don't think it's a stretch to say that a higher percentage of sales are coming from dine-in this year. I mean, you still had a lot of COVID overhang at the beginning of 2022, where people were still not as free living on the dine-in experience as they are now. I don't think you'll see much argument from anybody there. I think as a restaurant, you always have multiple channels, right? The same way, like at Chali, we market, right? We market to restaurants. We try to get them to buy our service, and we reach them through different channels. Sometimes we meet them at conferences. Sometimes we get them through paid Google ads. Sometimes we're cold calling. Sometimes they read like an ebook or a blog post. These are all different channels that we're acquiring customers. And each of those channels have different success. They have different close rates. They have different costs, right? And so as a restaurant, you're getting customers from different channels. Some of them walk right into your store. Some of them hit you on your website. Some of them Google you. Some of them find you on Yelp because you have good reviews. Some of them find you through DSPs, right? And third parties. Each one of those channels is going to have slightly different metrics. They're going to have different basket sizes, right? And they're going to have different costs. Your third party is probably your most expensive channel, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't still do it, right? You love your dine-in channel because that's probably your highest margin. But if you just take away the third party, you're going to lose top line and lose bottom line, even though it's not quite as efficient. And so when we talk to SMB operators, it's like, yeah, this is more expensive than when they come into your store. It doesn't mean you shouldn't have it, because as long as you're doing the right practices and you are making money on those orders, you as a restaurateur are going to make more money. That's more money for your staff, more money for investments, and it's still worth it to do. So if I'm an SMB restaurant, like, these are supplemental revenues. I can do them pretty easily. I can get them integrated. I don't have to do any marketing for it. The dollars just come into my account, orders come in, I hand them off to the driver. It is a simpler channel to fulfill, but it's a more expensive one. And that's really the way that I think about it.
That mindset, sort of the practice of focus not only your marketing dollars on your first party, focus it on your in-store experiences, whether we are in a time of delivery boom or bust, start there and sort of work out from there. And if you have that strategy in place, meaning allowing sort of the DSPs to relatively turn on their own, even if it starts to lower as a part of your sales mix, then you're sort of, your strategy's right, because you haven't built your entire business on DSP. You're building it on your core restaurant experience.
Yeah, like, build on your own brand. That's going to be your most profitable channel. Add on these other channels because it's easy and because you still make money, even if you make a little less on a per order basis.
Okay, so here's one then, if that's the case, virtual brands. In light of some of these potential headwinds, is now the time for an SMB operator to even consider investing in a virtual brand?
This is a great question, Sean. And this is a really important one. And it's one that, to be honest, I've had this conversation probably every week, almost this entire year since the original inflation numbers and people started calling for a recession. I know you're not going to like this answer, but it depends.
look, right.
If you're an SMB operator and you think that we're going into a recession, which everyone gets their own opinion on, I think we're kind of already in one. You got to get as many sales as you can get, right? Like, that is your goal. So whether it's first party, whether it's third party, you have to make sure that you're bringing in enough top line to cover the business. Virtual restaurants are a really powerful lever to get there. That said, we're still so new in that virtual restaurant space that there is some risk there. If you're an SMB operator and you're trying to figure out how to add top line sales, and you have two options in front of you, I can add third-party marketplaces or I can add VRs. If you add third-party marketplaces, it is less risk and you have just as much potential for reward. If you go into VRs, you're going to have more risk. There is a larger potential payoff because some of these virtual restaurants, the Mr. Beast, the Umami Burgers, the Wow Bows of the world, we see restaurants that are doing serious dollars through those. And so there is an opportunity, but that is more complicated. You're ordering new food, you're ordering new packaging, you're training staff, you've got to have the right equipment. So it's work to actually produce. So yes, if you think you can take that risk, then the ultimate payoff is there, but there's more risk in that than there is in just adding some third parties.
Okay, so let's break this down a little bit further then, because this is good. There is risk, right? When you start a VR, virtual restaurant, it's not only introducing new food, but it's also spending, to your point, right? Whether there's a kitchen, like whether you have to change some of your production methodology. So advice on that one would be develop food, develop items, develop product that you don't have to do a massive change to, whether it's your inventory or your labor or your, you know, recipes or production process. But then you're also investing in, even if it's virtual, you're still investing in labels and a logo and packaging and things that are specific, and even some marketing around that, a website, an ordering, a first party site, things like that. So it is about being very judicious. Is that an investment worth making? And I want to throw this one and I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Could like the Imami or the Mr. Beast, could that also, their success, could that be because of the national marketing push and engine that lives behind it and really helps promote it? And if that be the case, will that translate down into an SMB who maybe just doesn't have the budget, the reach, the experience to be able to push that forward? What are your thoughts on that?
The only successful virtual restaurants we have seen have real marketing firepower behind them.
There we go. That's perfect. So if you think about it, think hard. They can be successful. They can have more, but you got to have some serious marketing power behind it. And so for the SMB operator, really think that through, because it's like, if I'm not using the delivery channels and I want to turn that in to get, to your point, as many sales in as possible, it is definitely, there's a lot of cost per sale, and there can also be an experiential cost, but the investment, it's definitely a lower risk for return than VR. So that's something to think about for the SMB guys.
Yeah, we talk a lot about like the digital journey that restaurants go on, right? Your first stage is typically like start with third parties. Like it's really easy. You got on low cost and you can get good path and develop your first party, right? Then you need to kind of figure out your delivery, your dispatching and kind of that part of it. And VRs is kind of like that next level. So on that digital journey, virtual restaurants can be really popular, but they do have a little, like usually we want customers who have already done some of these first steps. They're going to be a much better fit for being able to execute on a virtual restaurant.
That's good. And let's pull this out for our folks as well. So if you don't have a solid digital demand generation strategy, and that can be for third party like Uber Eats, DoorDash, first party like your own website, things like that. Now we're not talking about your food, your menu, your restaurant, your location. We're talking about digital strategy.
Yes.
What I'm hearing you say is, number one, start with third parties, and that's bringing them in, the orders coming from their marketplaces into your restaurant. Number two, develop and launch your own web online ordering. And I would say web for SMB. Don't worry about apps right now. That's my opinion. You may have a different one, but that's mine. Third, then move to dispatch, which is the guest goes to your website and clicks delivery. And then that delivery is sent to one of the third parties to handle or to fulfill the delivery. And then fourth would be virtual restaurant. So that I'm hearing that is the suggested playbook for the digital strategy. And once you've maximized each step, move to the next. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you could probably slip loyalty in there too, but that's pretty good.
That's good. Okay. We're going to have a lot of good stuff here that we're going to have to sort through, because I am going to this next question, because it's, I think it's a big one for operators. Okay. So we're seeing data that households making less than $45,000 a year are trading down from fast casual to QSR. So it's your Chipotle's down to your Chick-fil-A's. So quick service, fast casual restaurants down to quick service restaurants, fast food. As we add recession to the inflation, the data shows that households, those same households may actually then trade down from QSR to C-stores for like out of home food. We're also seeing data that those households bringing in $75,000 a year and less are starting to follow the same trends. So, you know, as we, you know, inflation happens, as a potential recession comes, the first tier to reduce their consumption targets would be 45,000 and below, the second 75,000 and below. Two questions in regard to that. Number one, are you seeing that across your platform? And I'm thinking in light of SMB operators too. And if so, how can SMB operators prepare for the trade down?
Great. Another great question. Across our platform, we are not seeing big changeovers based off of restaurant type. We are seeing some movements. For example, this may sound counterintuitive, fine dining on third parties, that's trending up as a percentage, mostly just because they're opening back up, right? Because they're predominantly on-premise entities. So we're seeing those trend up. We haven't seen that trade yet, but at the same point, we did see a big one at the beginning of this year when, look, every time one of those stimmy checks rolled out, a popular place that money was spent was restaurants, and in particular, delivery. And so with those, you know, coming to an end, you definitely saw a decrease there. So we haven't seen kind of that survey response data translate to order data just yet.
Okay, so that's encouraging. So cautiously optimistic for our SMB operators there. But let's say it does. Are there things that SMB operators should be thinking about to prepare?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of tactics that restaurants have been using for decades. You create larger combos and upsells that are more targeted towards, you know, families, right? I mean, being able to kind of craft your menu to adjust for that. What we've seen is like, there's ready to eat and then there's like ready to heat. Mm. So we've seen some restaurant operators basically provide like half prepped meals, and they can provide those at a lower cost point. And then the consumer, you know, puts them in an air fryer, an oven or microwave, or warms them up in a pot. And then they kind of finish at home.
That's powerful. In fact, we saw a lot of restaurants do that during the middle of the pandemic. So what I'm hearing you say is, if we are seeing inflationary and recession trends or tactics coming, other than the delivery strategies, maybe break out your pandemic playbook when it came to what are some alternative ways for me to generate, you know, orders. Like you said, the ready to heat. Great thought. We had a bunch here in Nashville, a bunch of restaurants, especially more of your fine dining establishments, offer like holiday meals ready to go, you know? And so instead of going and buying those either at a grocer or sort of a store that focuses on that, restaurants themselves. But anyways, keep going. You're saying some really good stuff here.
Yeah. I mean, like there's tactics here. I mean, this isn't the first recession a lot of these restaurateurs have been through, right? Yep. So there's tactics, there's hours adjustments that you can do. You know, that lull period between lunch and dinner, you can leave those hours off. You can potentially send staff home. So there's a lot of tactics that I feel like restaurants have done. And I don't think that it's going to be all that different. I think you're just going to be applying it in slightly different ways, because when everything's digital, it just creates more opportunities.
Okay. So I think that even leads into our final question, which we kind of answered, which is how can SMB operators either become or remain nimble for changes in consumer demand in light of like inflationary and recession pressures, so that they're not caught off guard like at the beginning of the pandemic. And what I heard you say was two things: pull from your pandemic playbook, and hey, this isn't the first time we've gone through recessions. Pull from the recession playbooks before, like whether it's reducing staff hours, combos, trade up, maybe lower menu items for certain day parts, things like that. All right, that is it for today. Thank you so much to my guest, Sterling Douglas, for this really insightful conversation about how restaurants can think about not only the future of off-premise DSP, but also preparing operations for potential inflation and recession. Thank you so much, Sterling, for being here.
Of course. And if any restaurateurs are listening to this and want to dive in, you know, more deep on any of the topics that we covered, I'm not hard to find, and always love talking about this stuff and trying to help the industry, you know, we kind of all love. So this was really fun, Sean. I'm really excited for the content to get out. And thanks again for having me.
Man, my pleasure. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Stay tuned for more and have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Kitchen Obsessed podcast. If you work in a restaurant and are interested in appearing on the podcast, send us an email at podcast@freshtechnology.com and tell us your story. We'll be back next week with more tips from the kitchen.